Hello, and welcome to Dig It. I'm Peter Brown, and hosting the show with me today is Chris Day. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Peter. Today on Dig It, we're delighted to be joined by Jason Breed. Jason is a good friend of the Garden Centre, and over the years, we've got to know as an excellent horticulturalist, seed specialist, and as we'll discover, someone who is incredibly passionate about chilies. Jason, welcome to Dig It, and where do we find you on this, well, rather grey spring morning?
Grey spring morning. I can see a Union Jack flying. I'm sitting on my kitchen table working from home today in the joys of Great Yarmouth, Norfolk.
Oh, very nice.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, chilies then. First question, I suppose, is what got you into them and when did you perhaps start growing them? Have you got any nice early recollections?
It's one of these things where when did chilies come into my life? That question, when you posted it to me, I was just thinking, yeah, when did that happen? I think it probably went down to, obviously, got involved in gardening. You get to know all the different vegetables, the plants you're bringing in to sell onto the, to the public, as you're aware, Chris, into garden centres and places. So you get to know them. But as a child, we never had spicy food. It was like something which, we never went near. And it wasn't until I got into my early 20s that I started to find things like curries, Chinese and pizzas and all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And just started to sort of explore my taste buds. I think probably when it initially started was when I started working for King's, probably late in the day compared to some other chili experts or people who get into chilies. But when I started working, with seeds, I found, it was going around all these different growers, going around seeing what they're growing, obviously coming into yourself, selling packet seeds and things like that. It was seeing all these different vegetables. I haven't eaten those. So I made myself eat things which I'd never eaten before. And chilies were on that list. Mm-hmm. And for some bizarre, strange reason, I like them. And the hotter they get, the more I like them. So it was quite late in the day. I can't actually put a finger saying I enjoy chilies from X date because I'm not sure when it was.
Excellent. And can you remember the first chili plant you grew? Was it a good one? Did it have many chilies on it?
First one I grew wasn't actually from seed. I went to a grower who, the chap over in, of all places, I love my chilies, Salvatore Giannese, who grows probably most of the country's chilies, for the supermarkets and places. I turned up at his one day and he'd got some plants which weren't the best in the world. Yeah, he wasn't sending them in. So he goes, do you want one of these? Do you want a tray of these? So I took them home and they were just like a bog standard Padron type. And that was the first sort of initial chili plant I can remember actually being given and actually growing on. Prior to that, I hadn't really grown any from seed or, taken a chili plant, knowing full well that peppers, really you need a greenhouse to, or grow them internally to get a real decent crop in this country. Probably as the weather's now getting warmer, it might change. But I found never having a greenhouse, I never really had them to grow. So got a plant, grew it on as a house plant and just carried on, picking them as they went.
So where's the chili actually come from?
Well, chili initially is from South America.
Okay.
They reckon the chilies which we grow now, most of them originate from East to Central Mexico. But the name chili comes from an old Aztec word, which in their language they had for that particular plant. But they believe the origin of it is somewhere around sort of Brazil, around that area, is where they initially appeared from. They can sort of put a pinprick in saying that's probably where chili started from, was Brazil.
Fantastic. Because are they Solanum and then Capsicum? I'm just thinking their Latin names. The Solanum family, are they?
Capsicum.
Which is potatoes.
They can suffer with some of the disease and things which tomatoes have, but with it, the capsicums is the sweet pepper, the pepper family.
Okay.
And so your sweet pepper and your chili are both related. It's just one has heat and one doesn't.
Ah, so is that the difference between the sweet pepper and the chili pepper? Just the heat?
Yes, the heat. Basically, it's down to a thing which, in the trade, we know a thing called obviously a thing called Scoville, which we'll come back to in a little while on that. But with it, the Scoville scale is the main, gives away how hot that chili can be. Normally, though, it is down to taste. You know, it's down to whether you like a hot chili, a mild chili, or no chili at all. I have found sort of going around obviously selling seed commercially that I've got a grower who supplies a lot of vegetable plants into sort of like the East End and Central London, and it's quite funny if he has a pepper or a chili with a red colour on it, he won't sell it.
All right. Okay.
If it has a green label on it, it will sell because a lot of the Oriental cuisine, you know, people who say Oriental cuisine, they like to use a green chili. You know, if you think like, beef in black bean sauce comes with green peppers. If you ever buy anything from a Chinese restaurant, it usually has green peppers in. So green peppers are used quite heavily. Of course, we prefer them red when they're nice and sweet, but different areas and different cuisines like the different tastes.
That's interesting, isn't it? I didn't realise that.
And are chilies like, forgive my ignorance here, but are they like sweet peppers, where the longer they stay on the plant, they change colour?
They will mature, yes. So it always makes me laugh, because you know, we have a running joke with that particular grower that we know if you leave them on there, they're going to turn red, you know, or purple, or whatever colour the, you know, that particular sweet pepper or chilli is.
Right.
So yeah, you will find with chilies, the longer you leave them on there, one, they'll ripen up. And of course, the redder they get, the hotter they are on chilies.
Okay.
That's good. And I'm sure my ignorance now, Jason, I mean, ordinary bell peppers then. So you get the green and the red. Does that change the flavour? You were saying there's not so much an intensity of heat, but does that actually change the way
a bell pepper, if you pick a green bell pepper, and then you pick a red, or you get a red pepper. So if you went to supermarket, say like today, and picked up one of those mixed packs you get where you get the yellow, the red, and the green,
yeah,
I can guarantee you the green will be bitter. It will have a particular taste to it. Mm-hmm. And personally, I can't stand them. I will use them. They normally end up being put on the compost heap. Very rarely will ever buy a pack which you've got a green pepper in, because they have a selective taste. I don't mind them, but yeah, on a pizza or something like that. I had a pizza the other day which had green peppers on, and it the bitterness of it helped enhance the other vegetables and bits on that particular pizza. So again, it is down to taste, but personally, if you want the best flavour, always, or best, especially on sweet peppers, is make sure they're ripe.
It's interesting, isn't it? They call them the traffic light packs you go into the supermarket for, how popular they are. So obviously that's accounting for people's different tastes and different cuisines then. Maybe that's why they are so popular.
That is, you know, you've got the red pepper, which would be used quite heavily in people would use that probably more in Mediterranean cuisine. Mm-hmm. You'd probably find the green would be used a lot more in Thai and Chinese, and the yellow probably to add colour to Indian food. So, you know, there's different peppers will give, you know, obviously one give different, a different colour to a dish. Personally, my personal favourite, I love yellow peppers. I can eat them till they come out my head, come out my ears. I do like yellow sweet peppers.
That's really interesting, because you obviously love a hot chili, and that's my arch nemesis. I'm not a curry or a chili fan, and yet I love green peppers. So I wonder if there's something in that people who like green peppers don't like hot chilies.
It's down to people's palate, and going into, say, like the heat which you get from chilies. People who are like myself, who have got, have trained themselves to eat the real hot chilies, you get to a point where someone gives you a jalapeno and you'll think, well, that's mild. And someone will give you a bird's eye, a bit warmer. And then someone gives you a habanero. Yeah, okay, that's giving me a bird. And then if someone gives you carrot reaper, you give it back and say, no, thank you. so it does end up with knowing what, you know, where your heat preference is with chilies, and the same goes with bell peppers, you know, whether you like sweet or you more like that more sour on the green.
I do remember, Jason, going back a few years when you came along to our, it was our apple weekend, and I think it was an apple and chili weekend we devised.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember it well because I think you got me involved in doing some sampling, some tasting. Thank goodness for milk, that's all I can say.
If I remember correctly, Chris, you bottled it, and you allowed Mike, who used to work with you,
indeed,
to be the guinea pig.
He did, he was...
I had previously dropped in, you know, probably 2 weeks prior to that, just to get all the information, and I left with him and his wife to try one of my double chocolate chip chili cookies, which contain chocolate chips, obviously, the chocolate dough. There's the second lot of chocolate, and the third lot of chocolate was I used to have a lot of chocolate habaneros, which is quite a warm chili. And I'd candied them, put them into the biscuits. And I remember on that day him saying, "You brought any more of those than cookies?" It took me half an hour to eat them, but they were really nice. I think, how did it take you half an hour to eat a cookie? And he was just saying it was too hot. And if you remember correctly, I brought some muffins, which I've made with a similar, yes. I think they were with a slightly hotter chili, which I put in there. Might have been one of the Scotch bonnets or even hot, something hotter. And I remember we laughed at the fact that he started eating this and his face started to redden up because of the heat.
Yeah.
And he made the fatal mistake of, you know, going for a soft drink, which what ends up happening is when you eat a lot of hot chilies, of course, your automatic reaction is, I need water. I need something to cool me down. Unfortunately, what you find with water is it does exactly the opposite. It will make you hotter when you've eaten chilies. Mm-hmm. It was quite a, if I remember correctly, the video probably is still on somewhere on Facebook somewhere or on one of your old posts.
Indeed. And that, I suppose that takes us to sort of chili eating competitions, Jason. Do you get involved in any of those, may I ask?
No, I come to the conclusion I'm not criminally insane. Those chili eating competitions, I've heard some real horror stories, not so much in this country, but abroad, where people have eaten something which is way too hot for human consumption just to prove I'm the man, and it's actually burnt a hole in their stomach. You have people rushed to hospital to have, quite some serious internal injury from the chili. So... there is this thing of go so far, and that if you go on to, you know, going into this Scoville scale, which is out there, looking at that, I've got one saved on my computer somewhere, which literally goes up, lists all the popular chilies, and then there's a line, and it goes American grade pepper spray, and everything, there's a load more chilies above it, which there is more chilies in this world grown for crowd dispersal than there is actually consumed.
Wow.
India is one of those countries where you automatically think they eat a lot of hot chilies. There's going to be a lot of hot chilies. Yes, they grow them, but they don't actually use them for... there is more chili grown in India for the tear gas and the pepper spray market than there is actually put into Indian food.
Wow, that's an interesting statistic, because it's used in bear spray as well, isn't it? Bears don't like it.
Yes.
I understand.
Yeah, bear spray.
Bear spray. Is it squirrels that don't like chilies as well?
That's squirrels it. As well. There is a lot of different ways you can use, utilize chilies to their thing. But again, it depends on, what you're trying to do with it. There are a lot of things you can use for chilies can be useful other than being consumed.
Excellent. And just thinking about sort of where you mentioned they like a sort of warmer spot. What is the ideal conditions for a chili to be grown in? I mean, if you say your first one was a plant, if you were, say, going to start from a seed, what's the best way to germinate them, and then where do they do best?
Well, start with seed. If you're growing from seed, make sure you're buying some, you know, a seed from a packet from a merchant, so you've got a good clean plant to start with. Okay. There are various things happening in the chili world and the pepper world which are causing issues with, you know, seed and plants being grown. Yes. But with it, grow a seed, you know, grow a chili to your taste. Don't think, oh, I'm going to try all these different types of chili. I would always suggest to people, if you're growing fruit, grow stuff you like. So if you don't like the super hot, don't go for Caroline Reaper. Don't go for the ghost chili. You know, find where your taste buds lie. If you like Thai cuisine, go for a bird's eye type. There are one or two now. There's one in particular called Quickfire, which has come on the scene, which has actually been bred for the UK market. So it actually start from growing from seed to, you know, growing the plant. Within 65 days, you start to get your first fruit setting. Oh, so there are hybrids out there. And I personally would suggest, if you are looking at chilies now, is look at F1 hybrids. They're not genetically modified, which people start, you know, there seems to be an element of society, which as soon as you put an F1 in front of a plant, they automatically think it's, you know, some sort of triffid that's going to take over the world. F1s literally are just a cross-pollinated plant between two plants, cross-pollinate, you get a decent seed, and that seed then gains the best growing, habits from each parent. Yeah. One in particular, which you probably guys have been growing for, you know, selling for years, is one called Apache. It's been on the market for God knows how long. Fortunately, that dwarf chili this year, the breeder had a issue with growing the seed, so there isn't, you know, the Apache is in very short supply, which is probably one of the widest grown chilies in the UK market.
Okay.
Especially for people to buy, you know, from your, someone like yourselves, a grown plant to grow on. Quickfire is probably one which is probably, you know, I would say probably aim for, and if you can find that. Scoville on it's about 40,000, so it's a warm one. So if you don't like a warm chili, don't go for it. But with it, that could be used for a lot of, you know, Indian, Chinese, Thai, Italian cuisine, if you want, you know, if you like a, you know, a fiery pizza or a fiery pasta dish. So that one would be an ideal one to look out for.
Yeah, like I say, Jason, on the seed side of things, do they need to be covered? So some veg seeds need light. Are peppers?
When it comes to seed cut, you know, I can remember, you know, even from my garden centre days, the amount of people who come in who, you know, will grow seeds and they bury them. They put too much on them. The main thing with any seed, you tend to find is, if it's a seed that doesn't need covering and it will, you know, sit, you know, if you look at how that seed germinates, so it flies in, it drops in, bird eats it, drops the seed, whatever. It will end up, you know, it will get a slight dust covering of soil where it get, you know, just wind blows some soil over onto it, and that will cover it. So a very light covering. Normally, what I probably would suggest for people if they are thinking that is use vermiculite.
Okay.
So put your compost in, put your seed in, then cover it in vermiculite, which is light and allows the plant then to push through. It's what a lot of people tend to do. They make the fatal mistake of looking at multi-purpose compost, which, yes, great for growing things in pots, but if you're growing seeds, you need seed. You need a decent seed compost, put the seed in there, give it a light covering, put it in a heated propagator and your seeds come through. As soon as they're large enough to handle, so once you've got those two seed leaves, you obviously prick them out, pop them into small pots and grow them on. And the best place, if you've got a greenhouse, grow them on in there. If you've not got a greenhouse, kitchen windowsill, somewhere where it's warm, somewhere where it's going to get plenty of light. If you're growing on a kitchen windowsill every 2 or 3 days, give it a quarter turn so your plant isn't growing at a 45-degree angle towards the light. Of course, a lot of people now are starting to buy plant lights, which you can get at a reasonable price, you know, to put over plants, which obviously can help, especially if you're growing, you know, so a lot of people now are going hydroponically, you know, growing plants that way inside the house. So there's a lot of different ways of growing them. But once they're large enough, you know, you've got to plant them out. The best place, if you've got a greenhouse, put them out there with your tomatoes, in your greenhouse and grow them on, and you'll get a good, decent crop. If you haven't got that, I would suggest grow it on as an indoor houseplant.
Okay.
So, literally, itching with a seal, let it grow on. I've got a friend of mine is heavily into his Thai cuisine. He's got a chili plant. I don't know how many years old it is, but it's like a woody shrub growing in a large pot on his kitchen side. And he just literally goes to it, picks a couple of fruit off, chops them up, puts them in his food, away he goes.
So how big does the chilies get? Are they sort of like tomatoes where they're 5-6 foot tall? Are they a bit bigger?
It can depend on the plant you're using. So take Apache, which I've mentioned already. That one is quite a dwarf, so that would be like more compact, would be ideal for if you're growing on a kitchen side. Some of the other varieties which are out there, though, will grow quite tall. I remember going into a hydroponic centre once where the guy had a hydroponically grown chili, which is like his showpiece to show on what you could do with hydroponics. And the plant was roughly about 6 foot high by about 4 foot in a sort of enclosed hydroponic system. It was absolutely massive, and it was covered, and I mean covered in chilies. In their natural environment, they can get reasonably large. Of course, when you're growing them in a container, you are going to slightly dwarf them, and also you're going to be growing them, keeping them at a particular height. So if they start to get a bit too leggy, you just pinch the tips out.
One of my friends, Jason Martin, he keeps his chili plants year to year. He puts them out during the summer. He's got a fairly warmish conservatory, not madly heated though, and he brings them in, and he keeps his stay on for at least 2, maybe 3 years. Is that what the way to grow them?
With chili plants, I would class them as almost what we call conservatory plants, which you grow inside in the winter and you put outside as soon as it gets about June, and you grow them outside. The only downside out once you put them in and out, of course, there are all the issues of pests, disease, and of course you put them out into the elements. The nightmare and chili is they do tend to become white flies' favourite food. Mm-hmm. I've also found I grew some chilies out on a more ornate chili, which a chap I know gave me in a container, which was one of the more dwarf ones. And just put it this way, the slugs turned it into a skeleton. That is the issue sometimes you can get, is if you put them out there and you think, they'll be all right. Sometimes, and again, you bring those plants back in, you don't know whether vine weevils may have, make sure you water them with nematodes before you consider bringing them back in, because what you could end up doing is just bringing a load of vine weevil into your conservatory or greenhouse, and then you end up destroying other plants.
Mm. Good point, yeah.
And with regards to feeding them, are they sort of very voracious feeders that need feeding every couple of days, or are they sort of...
Treat them like a tomato plant. Don't feed them until you've got your first fruit set. The fruit will set, no problems. You don't need male and female plants. The flowers are hermaphrodite. They basically have male and female parts. They will literally produce a chili from their flower. You don't have to worry about going around with a paintbrush if it's inside, like a slow of bees going around. They will set no matter what.
Okay.
You will find if you have got them in a kitchen, you have your patio doors open. I've had it in the past where I've had a plant growing on, growing the kitchen window or on the kitchen side, and the back door's open, a big massive bumble comes flying in, takes some pollen off the chili plant and flies back out again. Much to the shock of my wife, who basically, she doesn't want, she likes bees, but not close up. I came into the kitchen and I remember her sort of like, you're right, she goes, here's a bee. Okay, I'll go back out. And it did. It sort of flew straight back out. It was quite surprising that how bees will find pollen. I've had it where we've got some, in front of me here, my wife loves daffodils, got some cut daffodils, which got in vases. And we've had the door open, the bees flown in and flown back out again. It's quite strange how they don't mind getting the pollen from the ones outside or the ones inside.
Mm. Definitely. And thinking about the fact you mentioned earlier, Jason, that most of the varieties we get are F1s, saving seed then is probably a bit of a no-no?
Well, this is the thing. If you get a chili, I've got some. I used some chili yesterday. These were bought from the supermarket from the joys of Gambia. I've got some seed which is in a I've saved from those. I am going to give them a test just to see what happens. I know full well they probably are an F1. They may not come to anything. I may end up not with a bird's eye chili, which I've got. I may end up with some sort of rogue random hybrid. The problem you've got is if you're saving seed, if it's in a controlled area where you know nothing else has come in, there's no other chilies in that area, you can probably guarantee they may well, and if it's an open pollinated variety, like, you know, something like the Scotch Bonnet or the Tabasco or the Habaneros, those you probably will find, if you save the seed from them, they will give you a plant next year. Downside, what can end up happening is, though, if you're growing a lot of chilies, you end up with a sport. You end up where pollinated insects come in and they've moved pollen around, and you end up with, you know, something which could be a bit of a rogue between two of the plants you've got. That is how some of these unusual varieties which grow there have suddenly appeared on the marketplace. It does become, you know, if the main thing with, you know, if you want to save seed, have a go. But what you may well find is if you're saving it for chili seed from something you bought from the supermarket, most of those in the supermarket will be F1 hybrids. And most of those, what you will find is when you sow the seed, they may germinate, but they may sport back to either one of their parents.
Is it practical to take cuttings from chili plants? You know, if you've got a really good variety?
It has been known. I was talking to a chap the other week who, you know, what he tends to do, he grows, you know, tomatoes, chilies, and then he will then usually get more plants by taking cuttings. So there's nothing stopping you from taking cuttings. Personally, though, I would suggest probably tissue culture, obviously, is done quite widely for alcohol horticulture now. Mm-hmm. But personally, I would probably prefer to grow a plant from seed.
And can you drop any names as to where customers should go to look for the seeds? I mean, are there any sort of specialist seed companies that do just chilies, or weird ones that we're not going to find in maybe the Fothergills or the T&M ranges?
You know, in the ranges you've got in your garden, you've got most of what can be grown in this country. The problem with, you know, the issues we've got now with chilies, and with Brexit, and also then with the pepper chat fruit virus, which has come in, which is affecting the peppers and the tomato crops at the moment, that is now putting quite the squeeze on being able to get different types of seed and plants into the country, because they're obviously got to be clean, and they've got to have obviously the certification to help, you know, say, you know, stop that disease, you know, spreading as, you know, it can do. You get that in a greenhouse, you know, in a commercial state, basis, the problem you've got there, it will literally go through your crop and destroy it. And if you do actually have that in your greenhouses, you are certified by law to let DEFRA know. And of course, you know, will come along and destroy your entire, you know, everything you've got in your crop, and will then put you probably on a ban of growing those particular, you know, it can end up where if you get some of these, you know, new diseases and it's labelled, you end up being almost a bit like foot and mouth, where farms were completely cut off, where they, you know, then they weren't allowed to have anyone go on or off the property. And if you did, you have to be, you know, your tyres sprayed and all that type of stuff. So you can end up with some of these, you know, with diseases like that, if you are, you know, purchasing seed, make sure it's clean seed. Like I said, going back to, you know, the initial question, there are a lot of, obviously, people who do specialised chili seed. Yeah, you know, the company I work for, Mole Seeds, they do a range of seeds you can get in commercial basis, and you will find, you know, there are other companies out there who do exactly the same. Then you've got companies like the Devon Chili Farm, the South Devon Chili Farm, who also sell seed. And over in, if I remember correctly, the sister of the guy who grows, obviously, runs the I Love Chili site, Edible Ornamentals, I think they're now called the Chili Ranch, who are based over in Chorston in Bedfordshire. You know, they sell seeds, plants, all sorts of bits and pieces. And again, it's worth just finding, you know, if you're after a particular chili, make sure, one, you can get it into the country, one, you can actually grow it over here. And again, some of the varieties which are out there, unless you really have got a decent greenhouse nursery situation, you probably are not going to get a decent crop from. There's some I can think of which are called 7-pod, which means they're Jamaican ones. they're one of the real super hots. And one chili, you can make 7 pots of jerk, you know, Jamaican jerk from. Wow. That is how much.
Gosh.
That is how hot these chilies are. They literally will take the chili in, put it in, cook it for a few minutes, take it out, put it in another pot. That chili will do 7 pods. That's how you got 7 pots of chili. So that one chili has enough heat in it to be used for 7 pots.
Crikey. Perfect. That's good. And just thinking on with regards to diseases. You mentioned whitefly and obviously the favourite of slugs. Anything else that we need to sort of look out for as spider mites or?
You've got out there, pest-wise, you know, I didn't note this down quite as the list. With any plant, it does become quite an endless list, put it one way. Of course, red spider mite is one of the main things I usually find when you're growing in any greenhouse becomes an issue because they like that dry, arid atmosphere. So if you are growing chilies in a greenhouse, it's always worth, if you've got paving stones, keep the humidity in there, which by doing that, red spider mite doesn't like that humidity. It likes dry atmospheres. So that is one way of obviously helping to combat an issue. But of course, once you do get it, it is always a slippery slope of trying to keep on control, you know. We've all had that issue in a greenhouse or on house plants inside the house where literally you end up red spider mite and you may have, you fight that long and it almost seems a losing battle. And in the end, you think, I'm just going to get another plant and the plant ends up going. Shame, really, but that's sometimes how it does. And again, things like aphids, one in particular, of course, fungus gnats or fungus funeral mosquitoes, which is I do like that other word for them. Their larvae can undermine the roots. And of course, if you've overwatered plants, again, people, when it comes to indoor plants, people have this tendency of being over-friendly, over cautious and keep plants fairly moist. And of course, when that happens, eventually the fungus gnats come in and they will then lay their eggs. And of course, you end up with those little tiny white worms going around. Of course, they can undermine the roots. And of course, your plant just literally rots in the wet, cold compost. So it's worth probably keeping plants slightly to the dry side. One thing which I found with chilies, you can actually almost, a bit like African violets, gerberas, where you can, and spathiphyllums, where you can literally almost let them tell you, I need water, where they just start to flag slightly and then water them. I find that does work quite well. It is quite amazing how a plant, which is, I had a spathiphyllum, which I've got in my living room, and sometimes, you know, you walk past it every day and occasionally you think, I need to water that. And then you come in and it's flagging. You put some water on it and about 2 hours later you walk past it and you wouldn't have thought it was flagging anymore. So it just shows you on how quickly plants will recover from, you know, from that sort of process. But whitefly, again, whitefly is also an issue at the moment because there is this new strain of whitefly, which is coming in, which again is one of the main reasons why a lot of plants aren't being imported into the country. With a new strain of whitefly, they found it's quite immune to a lot of the pesticides out there as well. And whitefly, unlike other insects where they have egg, larvae, pupa, adult, you still get that process. But when that plant, when a whitefly is in its pupa stage, it is still feeding off your plant. It literally is sucking the life out of your plant, even when it's turning into that little tiny Vulcan bomber, as we know as whitefly. So yeah, whitefly can always be a bad issue when you get, you know, on chili plants. Again, there's a lot of other things. If you grow slugs and snails, I've mentioned already, which could be an issue. Another one is flea beetles.
All right.
They come in, we get like the flea beetles from, you know, the rape crops and places, if you're in there, like you guys are out in the country, when they start cutting that, they fly out from, you know, feeding on the rape seed, and they then find something else to feed on. They can, you know, cause a lot of damage to chili plants. And again, there's things like some of the caterpillars of some of the very lovely moths we see going around, which, obviously, you know, the moth has a lovely name to it, and then the caterpillar has this sort of like thing called hornworm or cutworm, and you think, well, it's a caterpillar. You know, it, a lot of caterpillars can also cause an issue. And again, some of the sawflies and bits and, you know, things out there, they literally can skeletorize a plant almost very quickly. So there's a lot of, there are a lot of insects out there. If you're growing them outside, you've got to keep an eye on. But of course, some of those will come, you know, you will get that pest problem inside as well if you're not careful. So it's always worth just, you know, keeping an eye on. Pesticide wise, you know, some people don't like to use, you know, systemic stuff, and I don't think there's much available now. A lot of the stuff which you guys sell now is contact. So if you do get a problem, say like whitefly, you're going to have to do a continuous 2 or 3 days worth of, every 2 or 3 days, spraying, trying to get on top of the problem, trying to kill off the new larvae, the new adults. And again, people just think, well, why am I bothering? And they then just throw the plant and buy a new one. Shame on the plant, but sometimes it can just be, if you get a very bad issue, it is worth cutting your losses before that whitefly gets on everything.
But on the whole, they're not a problematic plant. They're quite an easy plant to grow and don't suffer.
Listing those pests down, you think, oh my God, I'm never going to grow chilies. But every other plant gets those.
Yeah. So that's what I thought. As long as they're fairly easy, we won't worry about them.
Brilliant. As I've noted, growing them as an indoor house plant, they are probably not problematic at all. You know, you're taking fruit from them. After a little while, you know, they get a little bit leggy, or they'll have a period of a rest period sometimes, and you then just trim them down a bit, probably pot them on, grow them on a bit. Again, through the winter months, you'll probably find the fruit does sort of slow up, you know, like it does, you know, you take a lot of pansies. As soon as we get into November, they seem to stop flowering until it warms up again, and then they produce more flower. You can find that with a chili plant inside. You know, they'll produce flower, and then all of a sudden when the light levels go down, they stop flowering. They just sort of almost like go, sort of stay there like a greenhouse plant. And then they'll start, you know, you pot them up in the, you know, the following spring, put them in a, you know, in some fresh compost, start feeding, you know, start getting growing, and you'll find the plant will recuperate and come back.
Jason, what's the favourite thing you do with your chilies? Do you have any particular fortes you like to work with them in the kitchen?
It's quite a weird one, because as you've bared witness, chilies, you know, can be used in all sorts of cuisine. You know, I've created something which get a pint of Guinness, you know, and pour that in, and then I put Tabasco sauce in it and call it an Irish devil. It's quite an easy to cocktail, that one. Also means no one else drinks your Guinness. You've then got things like I've had hot chocolate, which you've had chili chilies, put, you know, a chili sauce, just a few drops to make it almost like give it a spicy burn. And then cocktails. I've done things, you know, I brew my own mead every so often, and occasionally I've used infused a bottle of chili, you know, a bottle of mead with chili, and, you know, again, you get that nice heat, which can then be used with certain other liqueurs and things, just to give a bit of extra sort of flavour to them. Again, I've used, you know, what can end up happening, though, what I found is when you're using sort of the soup pots, like I like things like the habaneros, you put them into soups, the burn just overbears any other flavour you're trying to get from that. I once produced a pumpkin soup with and I put some of those habaneros into it just to add a bit of, and I think I probably put a few too many in, and it literally was just hot soup with an extra heat coming back after you've swallowed it. So it does become an issue where you can, if you're not careful, you can find you overheat things. The other thing I found is with chilies is if you put them into dishes, and even if you're using like a mild jalapeno or something like that, and you say you do a Rogan Josh or something like, you know, some sort of Indian dish, which has got a slight little bit of heat to it, and then you batch cook it and you freeze it, I can guarantee when that comes in that freezer, it'll go up in, you know, in heat. Because when you freeze chilies, it adds to the heat of the plant. You know, it adds to the heat of the fruit. I don't know why. I've never really looked heavily into it. But when you freeze chili, if you take chilies and freeze, chop them up finely and put them in the freezer, I guarantee they'll be hotter than if you were using them fresh.
But do you not find that when you say a chili con carne or something like that, you also get the other herbs and flavours come back a lot better? I always think the second time it's being cooked. I don't know what it is, like you, it's, but it definitely, improves.
That does occur. Again, putting chili into, obviously, chili con carne or anything like that, again, it's utilising the right chili as well. If you put too hot a chili in there, you just end up, you can't taste anything else bar the heat.
Mm-hmm.
What I found with some of those super hot chilies, though, I tend to use them in sweet dishes, which, Chris has been witness to, where I put them in biscuits and put them in cakes. Over this weekend, I'd actually made some with some bird's eye chilies, some lemon, white chocolate, and chili cookies. So again, I will dabble with them, but I would say if you're cooking savoury dishes and you want to put some chili in, stick to some of the more milder ones. If you're doing Thai cuisine, obviously use the bird's eye chilies. If you're doing more Italian cuisine, use the jalapenos or Anaheims, things like that, which are slightly just give a little bit of heat to it. And again, if you're doing more Mexican dishes, again, jalapeno, stick to probably the more jalapenos. It's quite strange how most people, when you say they like hot chilies and they just, I love jalapenos, and then you show them the Scoville scale and realize they're eating a very mild chili.
A bit disappointing.
Well, like me, a Padron, I think, is quite hot sometimes.
Padron is a great one. That one, if you like Padron, is cut them, literally cut them in half, de-seed them, shove some cheese in it, shove them under the grill. Lovely. That's how I use Padron. Padron is great for that. Padron's also the one which, when you, a lot of the kebab shops around the country tend to use as one of the fresh chilies they'll put into your kebab.
Mm-hmm.
It's either that or it's a jalapeno. It's never anything hotter than that.
That's it. But the thing that always amuses me with Padrons, you don't get it so much these days, but I'm going to say 10 years ago, you'd get your packet of Padrons and you'd fry them off in some salt and olive oil. And about 1 in 10 would have a real kick to it, and the rest were all totally lovely and mild. But I always used to worry that I was going to be the one that got the hot one.
Well, you saying that, I remember many years ago, you could go and buy what was known as chili roulette. It was a chocolate game, which it was done. They were done like bullets.
Yeah.
And there were so many of these bullets, and you used to spit, literally there was like a spinner in the middle. You flicked it. It went round. When it stopped at one, you ate that chili, and then it would go round until you were left with, just one chili.
Yeah.
I played that. A friend of mine had that game at a party, and me liking chilies, I think my second go, I got the super hot chili, and I didn't let on. And this game went on right to that last chili, and the last person having to eat the last bullet, which was there, which was just plain chocolate, because I'd eaten this hot chili, which was infused in this chocolate.
Yeah.
Hated chili. He literally, he didn't like any heat at all, meat, two veg, gravy, yeah, that type of sort of guy. And he starts having it's like, I'm not eating that. Oh, it's going to, okay, you've got to eat it. It's part of the game. And in the end, due to peer pressure, he ate it. And he goes, no, I'm eating it. We've been done. And then they all look at it, and then it goes, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Jay, you like chilies, don't you? Yeah. Did you have? Yes. Which one? Second one. It was just so funny watching these people like, oh, I got it. Yeah. And I'd already had it. So, yes. Sometimes if you're playing one of those chili roulette games and you've got someone who's heavily into their chilies, you may well find he's probably had it probably first or second go and he won't tell you.
Yes.
Bluff. Jason,
don't play poker with me. That's the main thing.
Jason, we've obviously mentioned a lot of the wonderful flavours chilies can bring to our food, but what about any other sort of benefits chilies can give to our health?
Well, as you know, chilies contain capsaicin, which is used a lot in pepper sprays and tear gas, as I've mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It also is used as an anabolic It's used in a lot of tropical ointments and nasal sprays and dermal patches to, you know, to help us with. Obviously, regular consumption is said to give you a lower risk of death from heart disease and cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Not been proven, but with it, there is a low risk of there. The main thing which I found, which was quite interesting, and I can remember this, is like Peter mentioned earlier, you know, it's used to keep squirrels away and other things. Uses food defense. Now, with squirrels, you know, what they will tend to do is keep squirrels and other vermin away from wild bird food. They will put in chili dust and chili seeds because rodents and, like, you know, like ourselves, they will feel the heat if they eat the chili. So they smell it. They don't like the smell. They go away.
Mm-hmm.
What you will find also is in other places around the globe, I found out that elephants don't like chilies.
Okay, sensible too.
They actually, in places like India, of course, you have wild elephants roaming around. To keep them out of the fields and damaging crops, they will put, as we're around here, yeah, in this country, we're putting in like beneficial insect areas around fields, so you get the beneficial insects into the field to help pollinate the crop.
Yep.
Over there, they're planting chilies because elephants don't like chili. They won't go through it. There's something of, they know that chili is hot. It's not a fruit. You know, their memory, I don't like eating that. And they won't go near it. So they will put barriers of chili plants around crops they need to protect from elephant attack.
Excellent. Worth knowing.
I even read somewhere where they're also doing something called dung grenades, where they literally get chili and they put it in, sort of, you know, and throw it out to the elephant if the elephant's, you know, come, because they don't like the smell of, one, the chili, and also poo, as far as I'm aware. I don't know whether that's true or not, but this was quite one of the things I was reading. I think dung grenades, that's something a bit strange, which they'll put chili pepper in as well. but the main thing is, they are a good stuff here.
Does it work on cats and dogs by any chance?
Well, pepper dust. It's one thing which, you know, you go back to where people used to put pepper dust down, but that would be the ground pepper. That's what would be your black pepper.
Oh, right. Okay.
So that, but the problem with that is you put it down, you have, you know, like the winter we have, you'd be permanently going out there to stop the cats getting on your garden.
Yeah.
Because it just get washed away. Of course, what you'll find is with, you know, chilies themselves, again, they're up, you know, people have, you know, using, you know, utilised them to make pesticides and bits and pieces. You know, I was reading where some people have used them to keep, boil them up and then use the water to spray onto particular plants.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it works or not, I don't know. I've never tried it. But, you know, you see all these remedies of people using rhubarb leaves and various other different plants. Going back to the rhubarb leaves, though, last year, if you saw my rhubarb, it was Black Fly City. So there's a little bit of a myth there, I think, unless it's when it boils, it becomes a pesticide. I don't know. I'm just going to leave that one and walk away from the microphone.
Jason, we're getting towards the end of our chat, but we do like to ask a couple of questions towards the end. So it's our shipwrecked on a desert island one. So which plant or tool would you wish you could have to enjoy your life on your virtual island retreat?
On my virtual one there, I am denied on there because there's, shipwreck, you know, what am I going to need? I'm going to need something which, you know, utilises a tool. I did have an hour about taking a border spade because I love a border spade. I weed with a border spade. I plant plants with a border spade. But I think, well, I won't really need that on a desert island. I need something with a blade. But I decided then I would take the Dark Ages Swiss Army knife, which is an axe, would be what I would take. A tool which was utilised throughout the Dark Ages. Every household had one. It was used for chopping wood, chopping trees down, obviously various basic woodwork skills and stuff people would use with an axe. They would also then use it to, you know, dig holes, you know, do with they were sowing their crops and stuff, they would sometimes use it. It got used for everything. So I always class it as the Swiss Army knife of the Dark Ages. So, yes, I would take an axe.
Fantastic. It's a good tool, without a doubt. And I guess working in horticulture and having done lots of sort of shows and talks on chilies and all sorts of things in your life. And I think you're a radio presenter at one time as well, weren't you? You must have picked
up. I have shared a microphone with Chris on many a weekend in the past.
That's it. Have you picked up any good tales? I mean, obviously the chocolate chili roulette sounded like quite a fun game. You got any other?
I have there, which is a real funny one. Too many to mention, possibly. One I will take. Is one when I was working. When I was working in the garden centre industry. I was working away doing some labels, and my boss is at his desk. And if you imagine at the garden centre, we had this office which had mirrored security glass, so you couldn't see anyone in there, but you could see out. And this lady gets out of a car with a garden cane and what resembles some sort of climbing plant, looking quite sorry for itself, comes marching down the path, and my boss sees her. He goes, "Oh, here's one for you, Jay." And I go, "Okay, then." So this lady gets to the information desk where my office was, and I hear this thud. I turn, she dumps it down, and compost going everywhere, and she goes, "This clematis has died. I demand a refund." And like most gardeners, like yourselves, you have a policy that if a plant fails, you will, look at it. And I could see that this particular clematis had suffered from wilt. So I take it out of his pot. Its roots were still healthy. I go, "It will shoot back. It's got wilt, and it will grow back." And she's going, "Yes, but I want a replacement." And I go, "Well, I could do, but I'm not going to." And she looks at me in complete horror. I could see in the corner of my eye, my boss almost like wording, "What are you doing?" I let other people put extra words in there because I could see wording that as well. and he ended up, so I go, "I can't give you a refund. Sorry." It's like, "I can't give you a replacement." What this lady had forgotten to look at was the label which was on there, because I could see the clematis, I could see the plant, I could see also the label that she bought it from one of our competitors. And she'd obviously bought some from us and thought this plant had come from, from us, but it hadn't. So this argument goes on. I could see her slowly going to stress out. So, why aren't you going to give me a replacement? And then I pointed out that you didn't buy it from here. And this lady went from everything from being literally stratospheric, almost like you'll explode, to coming right down. "Oh, I'm deeply sorry. Very apologetic. Do you have one of these?" I go, "Yes, we do. Thank you very much." So obviously, she followed me down to the climbing bed. We picked up a replacement. She also picked up two or three more. I think that was more just to say sorry for, obviously not being a slightly bit of a donut and embarrassing herself. And then went out also, I think, with some clematis food and everything. And what it was, the chap, the rival garden centre, it wasn't yourselves. Somewhere else in the vicinity of, of Bedfordshire and Buckinghamshire. And I knew the guy there quite well. And I think we were on the radio, I think, a week or so later. And I mentioned it to him. And he goes, yes, that lady came down. I go, "Oh, right." Because, and I explained to him, and we had a laugh about it. But it's sometimes people will get so irate about something, they don't actually then think, "Where did I get this plant from?" You start to see red, and you just automatically go with the flow or go somewhere. And unfortunately, that lady, she hadn't looked at that particular plant. I'll take that story with me to my grave. It was just
it's a classic. Yeah,
it's a classic.
Another one, which I on a brief note there as well, is I can remember being at, as Chris knows, I did look quite young in my youth, many years ago when we both knew each other, the first time. And I remember having a lady come in wanting to see the manager, and I then says, "Well, I'm here." And she goes, "No, I need to see the manager." Because I wasn't old, she wanted to see the manager. And I could go, "I'll go into the office, come back out, same person."
Different times.
There as well. So, the story of that plant being thrown down, I can see it literally hitting the compost going everywhere. Oh, dear. I've seen it in my mind's eye. Exceedingly funny.
Well, thank goodness not all customers are like that. We're in a very privileged position in the garden centre retail. Jason, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today. How about our Digit followers finding out a bit more about chilies and the work you do at Bowls?
We all have most of us have the joys of the interweb, internet and finding various places. Of course, there's Love My Chilies, which is a chap who grows a lot of the chilies for the major supermarkets. He's based over Bedfordshire Way.
He's local to us. I hadn't realised just how close it is. And he's got massive greenhouses, hasn't he?
And it's in the middle of nowhere. You wouldn't even know he existed unless you know where he is, which I won't say because he'll end up with an inundated amount of people trying to find where this place is. But with it, he literally, if you've bought chilies in most of the major supermarkets, in those small packets, I guarantee it is him who's probably, you've ate some of his chilies, especially if they say they're grown in the UK, they will be from him.
Brilliant.
So, yes.
Right, well,
lovemychilies.co.uk is definitely one to go and look at. And like I said, his sister also runs the Chili Ranch, which is based over at Chorston. And you can have chili experiences of, how chilies are grown, look at how to look after them, how to cook with them. She does all sorts of different experiences which you can go and, do with them. I believe her name's Joanna Plum, if I remember correctly. It's a married name.
Yep.
So yes, if you go and see her. She again, she's got a very extensive website of different lots of information. And again, joys of Wikipedia, different places like that. All sorts of different information can be found on there.
Fantastic.
So yeah, there is a lot. There's a lot of different places. Again, the South Devon Chili Farm. I'm not sure what their website is, but that again. If you put them into a search engine, they'll bring up. And again, if you want some real ornate, very unusual plants, which, people like yourselves would have difficulty getting hold of, this particular strain of chili you're after, they will actually grow them from plants and they will, sell them across the interweb as well. So it's a matter of just making sure you're able to get what you need to get.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jason. That's been really interesting. We learned so much, Peter, today on
the world of chilies. That's amazing. I never knew half the things I do now. So brilliant. Thank you very much, Jason. That was great.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
Cool.
Thank you. Today's show was brought to you by Buckingham Garden Centre and Nurseries. The show was hosted by Chris Day and Peter Brown. The show was produced by Peter Brown. And our thanks to Chilton Music Therapy for providing the music. Thanks for listening.
At Chilton Music Therapy, we want everyone to know the difference that music can make in their lives. From parents and their premature babies in hospital, to grandparents with dementia. We provide music therapy and community music services to people of all ages and needs across England. We work both digitally and in person in people's homes, care homes, schools, hospitals and hospices. Find out more at chiltonmusictherapy.co.uk.